Blog Talk Radio.
This is Through the Eyes of the Black Woman with your host, Salida.
So late, please forgive me. I feel bad because I like to be on time. We had an awesome show last night. Was it last night? Yeah. We had author Ernestine Moore, and she talked about her book called Casualty of Survival. Wait a minute, I'm sorry. I can't remember the name of the book. Oh my God. You guys, my day has been a little bit interrupted, so Casualty of Silence, that's the name of it. Oh, my God, I feel so bad. Remember it. I got so much going on right now. But I want to thank you guys for tuning in. This is Through the Eyes of the Black Woman with your host, Salida. Thank you for listening in. Please, 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 and I keep saying it because I feel so bad. Please forgive me for being late. I'm going to probably add on a couple more minutes because I'm down to 37 minutes. I am going to probably add some more time on as we go. Great show last night. I'm going to continue to give these shows as long as I can live or as long as I'm able to. I want to continue to give you guys an opportunity to listen in to a show that's dedicated to African-American women. That's basically what it is. I don't mind any other race of people listening, but I want to dedicate this to the African-American woman because we need this. And I learned so much last night, and I can't wait to bring her back. I can't wait to bring back Jacqueline Stewart, who wrote the book Gossip, Intent to Kill. I'm going to bring her back, and we're going to talk about Jealous to Death. I'm going to get a date from her to bring her back. Miss Ernestine is coming back on the 24th. Which is a Thursday. excuse me. I'm going to have more people coming on. Let's talk about our issues and how we're dealing with life in general as a black woman. I want to go ahead and I'm going to try to get as much out of Stolen Women before we move on to another book that I'm looking at to do the discuss. And please feel free to call in at 347-677-1749. That's 347-677-1749. Before we get started, you guys, right now I got the same kind of music I had in a couple of days ago, so please bear with me. I didn't get a chance to put in more music, but I'm going to probably open this up with some music first, okay?
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Salita, the owner of Say Your Peace Radio Network. We would like to invite you to join our team. By becoming a host, for more information, check out our website at sensible64.wix.com/ Say Your Peace Network. That's Say Your PIECE Network.
Has a lot to do with our sexuality. Now, part two is basically talking about understanding our sexuality, and I was kind of, this goes back to, okay, now that we know this, we're beyond all what we've been through. Now we're to the point where we're young kids, we're going back to the beginning when it comes to us as childhood, recognizing childhood sex play, you know, the doctor nurse theory, having boys examine you, examine them. There was a story about a young girl named Erin, and I'm just going to basically talk about the story or explain the story. I'm just going to say what they said about how she described her story. It says, Erin's childhood sex play happened naturally in the course of her sexual development, which even without much information was strongly influenced by a relatively safe environment, and a protective family. This, of course, contradicts all the stereotypes about promiscuous African-American girls, like we just got off, who are supposed to be little she-devils in the making. And yeah, that's what they said. Once at a conference of a world-renowned sex researcher, a white colleague explained to my disbelief that in order to conduct studies of first intercourse among adolescents, he had to go to the fourth grade to find virgins. I wasted no time in pointing out that his remark was based on stereotypes and limited exposure to a true cross-section of black children. If he had bothered to ask the young girls he talked to why and with whom they were sexually active, he might have discovered that many of them were being sexually exploited, abused, and reared in troubled families in which there was inadequate supervision, which goes right directly into the story we talked about last night, Casualty of Silence. Perfect. That was right on time. Contrary to stereotypes about the early sexual activity of black girls, most African-American girls under the age of 13 are not sexually active and have little or no sexual experience beyond the normal sex play that occurs in experience beyond the normal sex play, okay, that occurs in early childhood, excuse me. Erin's story is typical of the black women in my research. Her childhood sex play included self-touching, masturbating, sexual arousal, and exploitation with other children, was kept to a minimum and accompanied by enough specific factual age-appropriate information. What does Erin's story tell us about other African-American women? Why does it matter to you? I believe it gives you a clear picture of a predictable childhood sexual behaviors that helps set the stage for her adult sexuality. I have seen many women who have never taken the moment of their youthful behavior because they never considered it to be particularly important. My research findings prove that, to the contrary, these behaviors remain a critical dimension of our sexuality long after memories fade. In this chapter, I will guide you through a simple review of your own childhood sexuality by asking a set of basic questions. I will also provide background information and more stories to expand your understanding of the connection between your life and the typical range of experiences that African-American women have reported to me. Now, this section, I don't know if I really want to go into this. I think the first part was very good, and I think this is just basically telling us, once we know, how do we go about learning how to deal with our sexuality, and are we being taught the proper way, or are we taught by the right people? All of this stuff is natural. It happens. I can't vouch for anybody else as far as them growing up and being curious about their bodies. I can only talk about me. But according to the women that she researched, she's making a point, and a valid point, what she learned from these women. It says, playing doctor nurse games, why is it innocent and exploratory? Like what most parents, yours probably assumed that prior to adolescence and puberty, you were not yet a sexual being. But parents who watched and listened discovered otherwise. Kids are born with the capacity to be sexually aroused. Through sex play, they express their sexuality. They use whatever they know about sex, however limited, to gain familiarity with their bodies by having some initial sexual contact. Children participate in sex play for pleasure to satisfy their natural curiosity about parts of the body that are hidden and rarely discussed, and to rehearse things they may do again as they grow older. You know what? This is what I'm going to do. I'm not really interested, and I'm not trying to take away from what you could learn from this book, but I'm not really interested in this part of the book. Let's see. I'm sorry, you guys. If I would have read earlier, I would have probably already gone to that point of making that decision. But I don't think, I've gotten, let me go to the back of the book. I'm thinking I've gotten what I want out of this book, Test Your Sexual Responsibility. How are you doing taking sexual responsibility? Okay, I tell you what, let's do this. Maybe I can get more into this because I'm not really interested in a girl growing up sexually active or whatever. I'm not interested in that. So, Let me see this. Let me see. I don't think I want to talk about that part. Yeah, that's kind of stuff I don't really want to get into right now. I want to do this. I do want to do this little questionnaire. I do want to let's talk about being sexually responsible. Okay, there it goes. It says, African-American parents tend to avoid strong opposition to premarital intercourse. African-American women are less likely to be actually taught about sex by their parents than by someone outside of their home. African-American women who do not experience sexual abuse before the age of 18 are less likely to engage in behaviors that heighten their risk for sexual transmitted diseases, including HIV, than those who do. African-American teens are more likely to have intercourse for the first time out of curiosity about sex than for passion or love. The age of first intercourse for African-American and white women are nearly the same. Fewer African-American than white women are likely to report an incident of sexual harassment in the workplace, even though they probably experience it just as often. African-American women tend to have fewer sexual partners over their lifespans than white women do. To put the facts in perspective, along the way, I asked you to consider dozens of personal questions that involved your past, present, and future behaviors, decisions, and influences. Let's take some time now to put your thoughts together and locate your position on the path to sexual responsibility. Here's a questionnaire to guide you. It's made up of questions I designed specifically for readers of Stolen Women, and you should not it should not be confused with questionnaires that I use to conduct my research. Answer each question as honestly as you can, then total your scores. Wow. I'm just going to ask the questions. I'm not going to say I'm going to answer. Okay, it says, number one question is, how much do you know about your body? A, I don't need to know. B, I have as much knowledge as I need. C, I know everything about how the female body works. Okay, number two says, how often do you examine your sexual organs, your vagina, labia, and clitoris, to make sure they are clean and healthy? A, never. B, sometimes. C, daily. Do you know how your genitals look or smell when you have an infection? Wow, this is deep. I know how they look and smell if infected. B, I know how they look but not how they smell. And C says, I know how they smell, but not how they look. And then D says, I don't know how they look or smell. We're talking about sexual responsibility, you guys, okay? These questions are deep. Okay, number four says, how often do you touch and examine your breasts? A, never. B, sometimes. C, regularly. Number five says, do you know how to touch yourself to feel sexual pleasure? A is yes, B is no. What do you think you know about how the male sexual organs, penis or testes, work? Answer the following questions, true or false. If he says he's had a vasectomy, there is no way you can tell from looking at his body. True or false? That is true. There is no way. B says, men need to ejaculate on a regular basis in order to avoid pain or discomfort from a buildup of semen called blue balls. I'm going to say no. Men need to be on top of you in order to impregnate you. No, that's false. False. A is true. B is false. B is false. And C is false. D says you can get a sexually transmitted disease only if a man penetrates you. We know that's false. And then it says, if you are beginning menopause and have not had a menstrual period for a year, you do not need to use a condom to protect yourself against a sexually transmitted disease. Is that true or false? That is false. F says, if a woman says she is a lesbian, the chances are that she does not have a sexually transmitted disease, including HIV. That is false. G says, if you're married, you don't have to worry about becoming infected with sexually transmitted diseases, including HIV or AIDS. That's false. How much information are you supposed to have about A, how to please a woman sexually? 1, none. 2, a little. 3, everything. B says, how do you please a man sexually? A, okay, how much information are you supposed to have about these? How to please a woman sexually, how to please a man sexually, how to have an orgasm, how to help a man have an orgasm, how to have sex where you put your mouth on a woman's vagina. Okay. You know what? You guys, I apologize. I'm apologizing all the time. I don't like the rest of this book because guess what? I don't like this book. Nope. I'm done. I'm sorry, you guys. I'm done with stolen women. Enough. I don't need to go back that far on that. I thought I was going to be able to, and I might have, should have read through it before I got started. But, okay. We have 13 more minutes left on the show. So what I want to do is I'm going to change my vision right now. And I want to, like I said, I want to dedicate it to the women. And I'm not ready to talk openly about sex in the sense of the good part of sex and relationships and stuff. I'm not really ready for that yet because we're on a healing thing. And I know this book is saying reclaim your sexuality, taking back your lives, our lives. But I don't want to talk about that part right now. I'm just not interested in that part right now. What I want to do is I want to start a new book, and I'm really going to push this one because when I had an opportunity to interview the author of this book, he enlightened us on a lot of things. And I can't wait to really do this. So what I want to do is I want to start this, and I want you guys to understand this. I might not have a lot of people that's going to like what I say or like this book at all, but it's the truth, you church-going people. And the name of this book is Sexual Abuse of Power in the Black Church, Sexual Misconduct in the African-American Churches. And this is by Donald H. Matthews, Ph.D. And I guess you guys are saying, golly, what is this thing with her talking about sexual abuse, everything she does? Because this is an awareness, you guys. You have to understand, I'm here to aware you of what is going down still today when it comes to the woman's body and how no longer does it belong to her. Not every woman is easily influenced by other people and taking over her body or misusing her. Not everybody is in that. You have people who are in control, but you have a lot of people who have bad, who have low self-esteem, and they don't know where to turn to, and they're not prepared for a lot of things that happen to them. I can say for myself, I wasn't prepared for how everything turned out in my life. From a child all the way up to who I am now, I wasn't prepared for it. You're just not prepared. You're not educated enough to know that these things are not supposed to happen to you, but they do. But I want to do this real quick. I want to take a break, and we're going to come back so I can get myself prepared. Give me 1 second here, okay? We're going to take a break, you guys, and we'll be back with the eyes of the black woman, and we're going to be talking about sexual abuse of power in the black church.
Visualize standing on the shores looking over the water. Take a deep breath. Now slowly release it. Clear your mind. Concentrate on just being still. Accept that your thoughts can be transformed to accept the changes that can take place. Look over the horizon and beyond your perceived viewpoint. Focus on what is important to you. Release the dragon of doubt, low self-esteem, and all the emotional baggage that you carry with you. Allow the gentleness of the breeze sweep away all your fears. Let the waves of calmness pass over you. Your life is all you have, so make sure you've planned it accordingly. Never stop dreaming. Know through relaxation, you have an opportunity to refresh, renew, and reinvent. This is your time to open your mind and allow the essence of truth and perseverance to find their place in you. This is just the beginning for you to take a chance and create an environment for the growth of a positive thought pattern. Have you thought about hosting your own radio show? If so, visit our website at sensible64.wix.com/ Say Your Peace Network. That's sensible64.wix.com/ Say Your Peace, PIECE Network. We will return with Through the Eyes of the Black Woman with your host, Salita. I want to tell the story of our existence in our own worlds. I want others to know that we all have a story to tell about who we are and what we are about. We as women play a very important role in life. God has allowed us to bear the brunt and bruises of so much pain throughout the world because He knew that we could survive through wars and injustices that have been geared toward us. He truly knew what He was doing when He created us. That is why they say we are the better half of the man. We as women need to take our place and stand tall, not wavering on who we are. We need not allow others to define us. We need to come together and stop putting each other down, making one another feel that they have to compete. Compete for attention, for relevance, and for substance. We have to know that we are somebody, that we are strong, resilient, intelligent, and most of all, survivors. Again, I say stand tall. Take your place in what defines you. Never let a tear be wiped away before it has a reason to be shed. Make every part of who you are represent what you stand for. You are relevant, no matter how others perceive you. You are relevant.
Alright, you guys, we're back, and I added some more time on because I feel so bad that I came in late and that I didn't get started on time. And then I decided not to complete Stolen Women, because the first part of it was good for me. I wanted to get that out. The rest of this is basically dealing with, she's a sex researcher, so she's talking about that. I just wanted to get the history out. I think I'm very proud that I was able to do that. The rest of that is not for what I'm doing right now. And if I would have read the book prior to me bringing it on to you guys, I probably would have been able to know where to stop. But I'm glad I did. I'm glad I was able to bring what I did bring to you guys. So, excuse me. We're talking now about sexual abuse of power in the Black church. First of all, I'm sorry, let me... This is Through the Eyes of the Black Woman with your host, Salita, and we're on the Say Your Peace Radio Network. Anybody who is interested in becoming a host of one of our shows, please let me know, and you can catch us at sensible64.wix.com/ Say Your Peace Network. Okay, you guys? Now, let's start off with this book by Donald H. Matthews, Ph.D., and I think this is so good, and I'm hoping the right people are listening, you church folk going people. Like I said, I might be making a lot of people mad when I finish this book. This book is off the chain. Oh, it's awesome. It says, we're going to start out and we're going to read a letter to the black pastors. This is to the black pastors. You listen to this. It says, "Dear pastors, you have been called to the most responsible position in African American community. You are the inheritors of the legacy of some of the most admired and talented agents of God's mercy and love that history ever seen. The works of Martin Luther King Jr., Minister Malcolm X, El Shabazz, Dr. Benjamin A. E. Mays, and many, many, many more, too many to name, preceded you in the struggle for freedom and justice for the poor and the oppressed black community. You have been charged with caring for the widows and the orphans, and like Jesus, you are to show compassion to all women who have been treated negatively by the double standard of the patriarchal power. Women taken in adultery, women that bathed Jesus' feet." Now, did you hear what he said? "You are to show compassion to all women who have been treated negatively by the double standard of patriarchal power. Your ministerial exemplars, have been role models for freedom fighters around the world and stand as shiny lights for the youth of this nation and the world. These men taught us of the power that lies in the witness of African American church. However, many of our male leaders were not faithful to the gospel of love and compassion to our sisters in need. In issues of humanity, sexuality, the church should have been without fault or stain, but it has been difficult to realize that noble goal. The oppressive historical situation of unbridled sexual, economic, and racial oppression has contributed to an African American church that has not developed a sexual ethic that cares for and keeps faith of those who are the least powerful in our midst." Man. "This has been especially true for females in the community. However, we now have the benefits of human rights struggle in the education so that religious leaders can learn to develop appropriate relationships with female members in our community of faith and worship. Since females represent the overwhelming majority in number, if not in power, often approaching 80% of the total congregation, it is time for justice, respect, and true love to prevail." So look what he's saying to the pastors. He's calling them out and letting them know, you look at your struggles, what Martin Luther King, Benjamin E. Mays, Minister Malcolm X has put us in a position where we should continue to walk proud and still fight the fight, because it started in the church houses, and stand up for the justice of the people. But yet and still, you need to stop doing what you're doing when you're in charge of all these precious souls, female souls, especially when we're 80% of the church. He went on to say that he wrote this book, first of all, to try to protect the persons in your congregation who have become the victims of the sexualized abuse of power. These victims have traditionally been women due to the overwhelming heterosexual orientation of most of our male pastors, who have developed and continue to promote heterosexist theological views, which see women as sexual objects and less privileged than men. Wow. You know, I love to say that word. Wow and awesome is my favorite word. Okay. Now, it says, this has led to women and girls remaining the most vulnerable persons who are subject to sexual victimization. Man. So, again, I think about the story I was reading last night, and talking to the author, Miss Moore, last night. And now here we go. We go from Stolen Women, the history of black women and how we were first taken by the white men, and how our black men view us now. Then we go to the most spiritual part of our lives, and that's the church. Man, putting this combination together, I think, is so, so awesome. Oh, my. Okay. Now, it says the allegations concerning Bishop Long's abuse of power regarding his relationship with young males now affords us the opportunity to consider the entire spectrum of abuse in which the vast majority of victims have been girls and women. I believe that it has been the failure of the African-American church to engage in extended and knowledgeable discussions about our views of gender and sexuality that underlies this abusive ideology and practice. Wow. Instead of championing a view of liberation and justice that includes justice and care for our women, we have simply adopted a traditional view of sexuality that is strewn with the oppressive cultural, scriptural interpretation and folk ways that are patriarchal, materialistic, and heterosexist. But just as we were able to see freedom when reading the Bible, when the majority of Christians saw slavery, we can also see sexual and gender equality where others have read the oppression and domination of women. Unfortunately, this ideology of gender oppression was not only present among Christian and evangelicals when Africans were brought to America, it was also found among those African leaders who conspired with the Euro-Americans to sell us into slavery. So, as you can see, sometimes we have to remove the cover and notice that we're part of the problem, too. And that's what he just explained. Now, but as free and rational religious leaders, we can develop interpretations of scripture that reinforces sexual equality of women that is nascent, though not fully realized, in Western scriptural traditions. For example, though most of us recognize that even though the New Testament scripture states that adultery is the only reason for divorce, we now recognize and will perform marriage ceremonies for those who have received divorces for other reasons. This is because we believe that the highest law, the law of love, which is not a law but an attitude of compassion, leads us to recognize that there are other grounds for divorce that are consistent with the law of love. We no longer believe, as the early church did, that women are the heirs of Eve's disobedience and therefore must be dominated by men. The reality is we don't have to be dominated by men anymore. We can be our own identity. And I know a lot of men don't like that, but he says it right here. Dr. Matthew says it right here. Okay. We know that early Christian theologians, thought that original sin of Adam and Eve was the knowledge of sexuality. This interpretation resulted in a negative view of the body and sexuality, and we're still reaping the consequences of that negative interpretation of sexuality, which, again, coincides with what we talked about in the last 3 days. Awesome. 3 to 4 days. In the last 2 days, I'm sorry. Last 2 days or whatever. I can't even comprehend what I'm saying here. Okay. I'm just excited now. I'm a renewing of learning this. I mean, when we did the book the first time, I really, like, I got to do this again because I thought it was so awesome. Let's see. What did I see? I'm yapping and I'm not paying attention. Okay. We now recognize the beauty of sexuality when used appropriately and with love, and no longer think of sexuality solely in terms of lust, as was the case with the early church fathers. These are just two instances where the continuing role of biblical interpretation under the guidance of God's love can restore and renew our sacred communities so that gender and sexuality equality can be realized. I have faith that we can develop different notions regarding sexuality and eliminate sexual abuse in our churches. This book outlines where I think we can develop destructive ideology. We must discuss this code among ourselves and our congregation, and hold one another accountable in the spirit of love and responsibility as we want to avoid the continued harm and scandal which has affected so many of our members and clergy. It says, up to this day, African-American liberation theology has largely ignored the ways in which African-Americans oppress each other. It has rarely examined or acknowledged the presence of internal contradictions that are the basis for our continued oppression. Dr. Alvin Poussaint, which we talked about him earlier, Why Blacks Kill Blacks, is one of those works that boldly stated that it was the oppression of black women by civil rights and black power leaders that killed the movements from within. If we are to be free, we must acknowledge our spiritual poverty that has resulted in our being our own worst enemies. This letter and book is not written in spirit of condemnation, but of hope as we recognize, confess, and repent of our failings and faults in this area of our communal life. As a minister of the gospel, and more importantly, a child of God, I have faith, the faith, to believe that with the proper education and support, we can turn the corner and become role models for those who will come after us. We had the misfortune of being the unknowing victims of centuries of silence concerning sexuality that was originally meant to protect us from the prying eyes of a large society which feared but was also fascinated by the African-American body and black sexuality. Okay. Again, we're back to stolen women. That just breaks it down right there. I love it. I don't know about you guys, but I am exulted with this. Okay. I'm sorry, I just had to say that. It is time for us to keep it real and use the intelligence, wisdom that God gives us to openly explore these issues with fellow clergy and community leaders, community members, knowing that none are perfect, for all are seeking a higher level of perfection and sanctification. In doing so, we must also recognize that the ways in which we have been victimized as well, our macho positions as authority figures, must not blind us into thinking that we have been untouched by abuse and neglect. I hope this book will help you on your way. Man, I love what he says. Okay, let's see. And that's so true. It says, did you know, and I love this, and I think I'm going to repeat this and put this on my Facebook page. It says, there have been dozens of if not hundreds of books written regarding the subject of sexual abuse in the church in the last 30 years, but none about sexual abuse in the black church. Is this because sexual abuse does not occur in the black church? On the contrary, he says, a recent study discovered that black females are likely to experience 3 times the amount of sexual abuse as females in white churches. Now, that goes back to the ideal that there are 3 times as much sexual abuse against black soldiers, female soldiers, than it is white female soldiers. So this all coincides, and I say this because I'm thinking about the military sexual trauma, and my page I have set up for that, and it amazes me. Yeah. This book is an attempt to raise this issue and discuss this problem with the black church specifically in mind. This problem has been hidden for several reasons that this book will address. It is important to recognize the suffering of African Americans in this area and try to remedy as well. This could not be done as long as the sexual taboo of discussing sexual matters continues in the African American community and churches, which we don't talk about. And when you talk about sex in the church, oh my God, that is something you talk about with the family, you know, and half the time it's not talked about with the family. The girls don't learn from mom because mom's not going to tell her because she's too embarrassed to talk about sex. And then when she has a baby in about 9 months, then we want to get angry and mad and embarrassed and because we've never talked about it with our children. Okay. This book is based on over 40 years of participation, service observation in black churches, 30 of which happened during my tenure as a minister and scholar of African American religion, my PhD and Master's of Divinity degrees in areas of sociology, psychology of religion, with a specialty in ethics, were awarded specifically from Divinity School of University of Chicago and the Pacific School of Religion in Berkeley, California's Graduate Theological Union. I consider my work to exist in lens of cause scholars and ministers like Benjamin E. Mays, Dr. Robert Franklin. They were both two of the former and present presidents of Morehouse College in Atlanta, who also earned their doctorate from Divinity School, the University of Chicago. Okay, we're not going to go into his accolades. Okay, now, let's see. That's his background. We don't really need to talk about that. We need to go and talk about chapter 1. Now, before we go into this, I don't know if I played this yet, but I'm going to go ahead and play this song before we get started on this.
A little trend to begin. Now you think you really gon' pretend like you wasn't down there.
Say Your Peace Radio Network. We would like to invite you to join our team by becoming a host. For more information, check out our website at sensible64.wix.com/ Say Your Peace Network. That's Say Your PIECE Network.
All right, you guys, we are back with Through the Eyes of the Black Woman on your Say Your Peace Network. I'm your host, Salita, and we're going to continue our conversation talking about sexual abuse of power in the Black Church by Donald H. Matthews, Ph.D., Sexual Misconduct of African American Churches. Now, I read his letter to ministers, pastors of the church, of Black churches. He basically gave the history of where we all started from with the church and the sexual ignorance almost to a point of allowing others to tell us, you know, how we should interpret sexual knowledge, in other words, and how we as the pastors perpetuate the machoism of how the role of the woman in the church and the role of the woman as the member of the church. So now we're going to start off with starts off chapter one, and I really want to go through this whole book because I've read it before and I think it's an awesome book to discuss. Really, it is. Okay. It says, I identify two major psychological conditions that contribute to the sexual abuse of power by pastors and other religious leaders in the church. These two conditions are, one, sexual boundary violations and sexual perversions. These are not exclusive categories. Persons who have difficulty maintaining appropriate boundaries with others can also be engaged in sexual perversions. Persons who are sexually perverted are by definition violating the boundaries of others. It says the psychological process that underlies these two conditions is the psychological and spiritual need for the power over others, which is true. Sexual abuse is one expression of this need for power. It may be due to some unresolved emotional or psychological issues that can be caused by any number of factors. The pastor may have an overwhelming need to help others that blinds him to see his needs to maintain appropriate boundaries. Wow. There may be the presence of unresolved psychological issues, caused by the trauma of family dysfunction or social interactions that have left the pastor with a need to humiliate others as he himself was humiliated. It may be due to low self-esteem, leading to a need to feel wanted. The reasons are particular to the particular person. These issues must not be used as excuses for misconduct. However, recognition of these issues and their effects are the key to prevention of abuse and the treatment of abusers. Now, lots of pastors, a lot of this I'm stating or making my observation on is what I'm reading out of this book. What I just read was sometimes the abuser is being abused, but he's not aware of him being abused, but being the abuser. Sometimes he don't. He talked about the two different conditions where these things are being violated on a daily basis, and they don't recognize that they're being violated. And in order for us to teach them that, hold up, there's boundaries and you've already overstepped your boundary with me, let's stop this conversation and let's move on. And what I liked about this book when I read it the first time was the idea that he's breaking down the pastor in a way to get him to understand what he's doing. If we don't understand what we're doing, we continue to do it. If no one tells us, hey, stop right there, don't do that, that is not right, You've overstepped your boundaries, and guess what? If you don't recognize, nobody's teaching you what those boundaries are, you will continue to violate them because no one's ever really taught you. We look at pastors, and we go to pastors, we want to go to them for counseling, and really, to be honest with you, they really shouldn't be counseling you if they're not certified to counsel you. That's just my belief. And a lot of pastors, I wouldn't go to them to tell them about my personal. That's why you have psychiatrists and psychologists. Tell them my personal problems, even though they say, well, you need to go talk to the pastor, when really a lot of them are not licensed for you to talk to them. And that's something we've allowed to happen for so long, where you go talk to them and they're really not licensed to give you any kind of information. You can't pray everything away, you guys. Please don't misinterpret that. You can't pray everything away. God wouldn't have created psychologists, psychiatrists, and doctors and all mental health agents and case managers if he didn't think we needed these people in our life. We have to step up and do what we have to do too. Everything cannot be solved without having the appropriate help. And prayer is just one of the avenues, but there are other avenues to go to. And I think as a pastor, sometimes we don't think of it like that. Okay. Okay. Ethically speaking, any behavior in which a person is used as an object is abusive. In this case, it involves using a person for one's own sexual gratification despite the negative effects involved in the behavior. The pastor who engages in sexual misconduct with his members is engaging in activity in which his power as the spiritual leader is being misused. For reasons that are ultimately harmful to him, his victim, and his church, and his family. The entire system of church and family are harmed by his abusive actions. You know, we want to jump up when these things happen. Say one of the victims actually confront him. Everybody wants to jump on that victim. How dare you disgrace our church like that? How dare you disgrace the pastor like that? No, that's the wrong approach, because a victim is what she is. She is a victim, point blank. He is a victim. There's a reason why he's a victim, and a victim should not be continued to be victimized once they've been already once they've already, the abuse has happened or the detrimental thing that's happened to them has happened. They don't need you telling them it's their fault. And that's what we basically do as church members, because we want to save our pastor. Because the pastor is the primary role model and the leader of the congregation, he sets the terms by example for ethical or unethical behavior in the church. His actions will have a profound effect on the spiritual and psychological well-being of his church and community. Although all instances of the sexual abuse of power is deplorable and damaging, it is especially true when this behavior takes place with the underaged youth. Okay, again, we're doing a full circle around, and I'm glad I picked this book up, and I'm glad I had the opportunity to interview this man. Therefore, the first condition that I will address, the issue of sexual perversion in the form of sexual molestation of young people in the church. The first two narratives concern these expressions of sexual abuse in the black church. And we're down to 5 minutes, so I'm going to see if I can get all this in. I'm going to try to read this, and then what we'll do is we'll come back tomorrow and finish this up, continue to talk about this, okay? Now, this says, this story was told to me by a 40-year-old woman who is the mother of 4 children. She was a devoted member of her church and was active in the choir and other activities. However, as she became more educated, she was dissatisfied with the power relation in the church that did not allow her and other women to serve in positions of authority. As I got to know her, she revealed the sexual abuse she had suffered in her family and the church. And this is her story. Okay? When I was 8, I was subject to sexual abuse by my stepfather. I recently had a flashback in which I remembered hearing my mother tell her husband, my stepfather, not to hurt me as he came into my room to violate me. I dreaded being left alone with him because I knew what would happen. This abuse changed me from a happy-go-lucky child to a moody kid who began to withdraw into a shell. I was only able to be myself when I went to live with my grandmother during the summers. Even then, I was afraid that he was doing the same thing to my younger sisters. I know I sound like Celie from Color Purple, but this is the reason why the movie was so loved by so many black women is because it represented much of what we suffered. Finally, I got old enough to protect myself and threatened to kill him if he ever touched me again. When I complained about his behavior to my mother when I was younger, she beat me severely and accused me of being fast and encouraging his actions. I knew that when I got older and stronger, it would be up to me to defend myself from his advances. Even though I was finally able to defend myself, my mother recognized that I was still depressed. Like most black women, she was suspicious of mental health professionals and didn't want her husband to face a legal system. Instead, she took me to receive counseling from the pastor of the church when I turned 12. I had blossomed early and had large breasts, which brought me a lot of unwanted sexual attention from males. Unfortunately, this was also true of my pastor. Instead of counseling me, he told me that it was his duty to heal me from the rape and sexual abuse. He told me the only way that could happen is if he was able to show me how to do it right. This led to several petting sessions on the couch in his study, which eventually led to sexual intercourse. I still remember feeling disgusted and afraid as he penetrated me in the name of the Lord. I can still see the picture of Jesus looking down on us as he raped me on his couch in his study. Even though I was afraid that my mother would have the same reaction she had when I told on my stepfather, I finally refused to see him anymore and told my mother why. Much of my surprise, my mother supported my decision with a look of sorrow and hurt in her eyes. The man she had looked up to and given her trust turned out to be just as immoral as her husband. She reported his behavior to the church officials, but instead of confronting the pastor, they accused me of lying. See, that's what I said, just like I said. When my allegations became known, I was approached by several other young girls who had suffered the same mistreatment. To this day, I'm filled with anger at the thought that my church, that the church which was supposed to protect me and guide me, turned on me in order to protect their spiritual leader from harm. I wonder how many other girls he had violated over the course of 30-year ministry. He is now one of the respected senior pastors in Kansas City area. When I see him, it is all I can do to stop from gaining my revenge. But nobody cares about the troubles of the black woman. Ooh, isn't that something? We are supposed to be able to protect ourselves, and when we can't or do or don't because we don't know better or because of what we've been told, All right, you guys. I am so sorry. I ran out of time. What I'll do is I'll repeat what I read today. Excuse me, I'll repeat the letter from the 40-year-old woman. And we can start again tomorrow with this. Okay, sexual abuse of power in the black church, sexual misconduct in the African-American church is going to be our next book we're going to discuss. And Donald H. Matthew, Ph.D., is the author. I want to say thank you guys for listening. Sorry for the lateness. I was able to come in and get us some extra time on. Thank you very much, you guys. I want you guys to have a great night. And have a great weekend. I will see you back here tomorrow, same place, same bat channel. This has been Through the Eyes of the Black Woman, and we shall see you tomorrow.
This has been another episode of Through the Eyes of the Black Woman with your host, Celita. We want to thank you for listening in, and stay tuned.